We are going to follow up on the letter Governor Walker sent to President-elect Donald Trump yesterday, asking for the authority to limit the number of refugees Wisconsin might accept, to be able to drug test childless adults before they receive welfare benefits, and to be able to resume the wolf hunt in Wisconsin. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, December 21st. Happy first day of winter. We have with us two guests from different political perspectives who will give us their takes on all three of these issues. And we welcome your take, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we'll probably go one issue at a time throughout the hour. Let me welcome our guest. Mike Brown is Deputy Director of One Wisconsin Now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Kevin Hermaning is a financial planner from Wausau, a political activist, and he was also an elector who cast his vote on Monday for Donald Trump. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy, and yes, I did.
And how'd that go for you? You weren't convinced to do otherwise by the people who wanted you to change your mind?
No, you know, we never hear about the people who are looking to solidify the will of the people of our state, you know, which is what we did. And we apparently were supposed to endorse the will of people from California and New York, which was not our task or our legal responsibility.
Yeah, well, another issue.
Different issue.
Yeah, but it was relevant to your title, and I'm glad to have you with us. Let's Kevin, you first. Just in general, what do you think of Governor Walker sending President-elect Trump this letter asking for more authority on all three of these issues?
Well, I would not describe it as more of the same, although I would suggest to people that they just need to read the letter that the governor sent to the current president in 2015 asking for some of these same changes, these same allowances. And so the governor has been very consistent in wanting to secure, if you will, secure Wisconsin's borders as best as possible, as well as bring about some changes on the social welfare side.
Yeah. All right. Mike Brown, what do you think of Governor Walker wanting President-elect Trump to give states more authority and the ability for Wisconsin to move on these three issues?
Well, you know, I think this actually is exactly more of the same. You know, this is Governor Walker kicking off his reelection bid. You know, this is politics from a career politician. You know, I mean, if you're looking to actually change federal regulations, change the relationship between the state and the federal government, you're probably not going to do it via a press release and a letter that you release to the media. So I think this is really just more about politics for Governor Walker than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go into the refugee issue first. Kevin, why should Wisconsin have more power to decide which refugees can settle in the state?
Well, first of all, I would say that all of these things are philosophically positioned right up the governor's alley. And generally speaking, most conservatives and Republicans believe that the U.S. Constitution reserves for the federal government only those things granted by the people as well as by the states. And so a state's rights position is very consistent with what Republicans and the Republican Party platforms at their conventions have been about for all of the 30 plus years I've been involved in supporting Republicans and Republican candidates. I would suggest to you that there is a great concern about the lack of true and proper vetting of those who seek to come to the United States. Now, please do not get me wrong. If I lived nearly any place in the rest of the world, I would do almost anything I could to try to come to what I consider to be the greatest place on earth with the most freedoms and the most opportunity to better myself and my families. But the truth of the matter is that we also have the rule of law and we have the responsibility, first and foremost, at the federal government level to secure our nation's borders and to protect the American people. And until we solidify the importance of strong vetting, as the president-elect describes it, extreme vetting about who it is who the federal government is allowing to come into our borders and where they end up. That's really the issue. It's where they end up, and why are they immediately, with no strong and consistent vetting, ending up in our communities with nobody watching over them or knowing when they're going to next report to the authorities.
Yeah. So, Mike, do you think that the federal government should continue to be largely in control of accepting and vetting refugees, or should Wisconsin have a say in this?
Well, I think that's exactly the point. You know, this is a federal government function of taking in refugees, of processing refugees, of vetting refugees. I mean, I guess the question is, what exactly is Scott Walker going to do with this information? You know, he's the governor of the state of Wisconsin. He is not responsible for federal immigration policy. He was not elected president. This is not a power that that the governor of the state of Wisconsin has. And again, it goes back to, you know, I mean, it seems like this is more of politicking on a hot button issue than actually getting into the policy specifics, because this letter really does contain no detail on what he might envision with this request.
Well, in the letter, Governor Walker wrote, Wisconsin has consistently voiced concern about the vetting and relocation of refugees from such countries. These are countries with terrorist ties. We would like our states to have a broader role in determining how many refugees and from which countries until we are comfortable with the vetting process that is being utilized to screen these individuals. Mike, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think, you know, this gets us dangerously close to, the kind of registries that were discussed during the presidential campaign, in which even, Republicans like Paul Ryan at least voiced opposition to. I think this is leading down a dangerous path, and a path that that we as Americans should reject.
And Kevin, what do you say to that?
Well, I would suggest that these folks are not citizens of the United States, so while they enjoy the opportunity when they are finally admitted, if they're properly vetted, that they enjoy many of the freedoms that we have, they don't have all the privileges. And so the idea that a governor and the state's taxpayers have no costs, if you will, of the implications and consequences of federal immigration law. What about the law enforcement costs, the educational expenses, whether it's K-12 or higher education? I think that the people of the Ohio State University, the students there and the professors, aren't particularly thrilled that the guy who ended up running around the campus, ultimately killed by an on-duty campus police officer about 3 weeks ago, would like to have a review of the vetting rules, and that certainly wasn't done. There's a fine line between a, quote, registry and the importance of people checking in. What's a registry when you have people who come here on visas and they overstay their visas, whether it's a college visa, an education visa, or a work visa, or some cultural or visit tourist visa? They're registered. We're supposed to be keeping track of them. We're not doing that. And the charities who ultimately make many of these decisions, they're not doing a particularly great job of maintaining control over the many of the irresponsible behaviors that that result from people who come here and then become radicalized.
We have just a couple of minutes left in this segment, and we're going to move on to the drug testing segment after the news. Briefly, Mike, in conclusion on this segment, how do you think the U.S. and Wisconsin are going to handle this refugee issue under President Trump?
Well, you know, certainly I would agree with Kevin that we have had, incidents of mass violence here in the United States. I think where I would disagree is that it is, restricted to people who practice a particular faith. I think we've seen, we just passed the anniversary of Sandy Hook here. I think, again, this is just a dangerous path for us to be considering, and I think it's appalling that, you know, the governor of the state of Wisconsin would basically be going up to the line and saying we need to create a registry of people who are practicing a particular faith, and that, we need to consider the humanity of these people who are, you know, fleeing just appalling conditions, and show a little empathy here. And I think this proposal takes us in exactly the opposite direction. Mm-hmm.
Less than a minute, Kevin. What do you think President Trump will do about this?
President-elect and Vice President-elect Mike Pence are really geared to give more opportunity for the states to play an important role in protecting the citizens of their own states, releasing some of the responsibilities that the federal government has retained. The governors across, many governors, Republican governors across the country, have sued the current administration unsuccessfully because you want to know why the courts are so important. It's because the courts have upheld the Obama administration's positions on these issues. And so I would suggest that, you know, it might have been described 2 minutes ago by our other guest.
Yeah, that, I'm going to have to jump in because we have news next. So do you think that the federal government should allow Wisconsin to drug test some food stamp recipients? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are following up this hour on a letter that Governor Walker sent to President-elect Donald Trump. And among other things, he asked for this authority. The state passed a law requiring drug testing of able-bodied adults without children back in 2015, but the federal government blocked that law. They said it was unconstitutional. Governor Walker wants that ban lifted and wants to begin drug testing able-bodied adults without children before they receive welfare benefits. What do you think of that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the issues that Governor Walker wrote to President-elect Trump about. Mike Brown is Deputy Director of One Wisconsin Now, and Kevin Hermaning is a financial planner from Wausau and a political activist. So let's talk about this. Should Mike, you first? Would you like to see President-elect Trump? How would you like to see him respond to this request from Governor Walker to let the state proceed with this?
Well, you know, first of all, the whole genesis of this idea in Wisconsin was during Governor Walker's own 71-day presidential run. I mean, it was proposed by him in the lead up to his announcement. And it's a politically popular idea. It polls well. And I think that's really the rationale behind proposing this, because, you know, first off, the experience in other states show that this doesn't work. And secondly, from a broader, I think, philosophical perspective, you know, just being poor or being involved in public assistance programs isn't probable cause.
Yeah. Well, why do you say it doesn't work, Mike? Just to clarify that.
I think we've seen the experience in other states. You know, Florida, for example, dropped their program. They found that they were spending more money on testing than they were actually finding anyone who was using drugs and kicking them off of public benefits. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost benefit analysis just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, research indicates that the rates of drug use among the general population are significantly higher than the rates of drug use among folks who are receiving public assistance.
So, Kevin, is this drug testing plan to drug test some food welfare benefit recipients something Wisconsin should be doing or not, and why or why not?
Well, one of the objections to the challenge, one of the challenges in Florida was that as they were increasingly tied up in the courts, the federal courts, the costs associated with challenging the Obama administration's position on this became part of the overall costs as well. It wasn't only the testing of all of the recipients. You know, I always find it curious that rather than viewing this as an attack on the poor and an attack on people who are receiving food stamps, what about the idea that maybe it's actually helping them? That it assists people who are who are on drugs or are unable to control their the challenges that people face. We know that once people become addicted to almost anything, whether it's cigarettes or alcohol or gambling or drugs, that it's very difficult to get off. And so there is no hard core or hard and clear burden that people have to face these days. These same debates, these same arguments against it are the ones that were laid out under Governor Tommy Thompson's administration 25 years ago when he was talking about workfare reform. What is wrong with testing people before they are able to access benefits from the federal government, from the state government?
What about, Kevin, the Mike's point that in Florida they were spending more money on this program than they were finding drug-using welfare recipients?
So it's a short-term view and perspective because as people continue to remain on drugs, I've done some research on this. I was involved up here in Marathon County with the sheriff's department and the county board, heading up a commission that looked at recidivism in the jails and drugs and alcohol and other mental illness issues, because really a lot of this leads to the same challenges, and that's a very heavy expense. But it's not just what the costs are to test everybody. It's the ongoing expense of having to deal with people in our prison system, in our jails, at the county level, as well as the challenge that people face by not being able to get off of drugs and find themselves a part of the able-bodied workforce.
Mike, what about what Kevin said, that this isn't a so-called war on the poor, but this is trying to help those on drugs get off drugs?
Well, I certainly agree that the state should be doing more to help people who are struggling with substance abuse issues. I don't think that's the point of that's not a point of dispute. But the question is, is this an effective way of doing that? And the data suggests that no, in fact, it is not. You know, I'll give you another example. In Arizona, between 2011 and 2014, they tested over 100,000 people. They subjected over 100,000 people seeking to access public benefits. They subjected them to drug screening. They found two people were disqualified because of a drug test. I think there are many other ways that we can reach out to people with substance abuse issues and help them deal with those issues and save money with the associated costs that come with drug addiction.
And Kevin, before you respond, Abby in Madison has a question along these lines. Hi, Abby.
Hi. My question is, if we do drug testing on food stamp recipients and they come back positive, are we providing them with any treatment to get over their drug abuse?
Kevin, isn't that supposed to be the plan?
Well, it may be part of it, but, the survey, I knew the topics we were going to be talking about today, so just because I have a philosophical position on some things doesn't mean that it shouldn't be backed up with some data. One of the study in Arizona that Mike talked about, they didn't actually screen everybody. 42 people in one month in March, I believe, 2012, 42 people had been asked to take the drug test. Only 19 took it. 16 of whom passed, 3 failed, but the other 23 were stripped of their benefits because they even failed to take the drug test. So what's to suggest that the people who wouldn't even take it wouldn't also have been found to be receiving, been found to have been on drugs?
Do you want to respond to that, Mike?
I think that the evidence is just overwhelming here, and the experience in other states has shown us that, from a policy perspective, this certainly doesn't work. And I think from a constitutional perspective, and from the ideals on which this country was founded, I think it doesn't work either. So I think there's really nothing to recommend this, other than perhaps it tested well in a poll that the governor conducted.
Let's take another call from Kevin in Crandon. Hi, Kevin.
Hey. Yeah. Yesterday you had the program on the war on Christmas. And
Kevin, what about this program?
This is certainly a war on the poor. these are Republicans here in Wisconsin, and then you got Paul Ryan. I mean, their whole philosophy is people that receive any kind of benefits should just...
Yeah, so what's wrong with that, Kevin?
When does it end? Okay, now there's all the food stamps. When is that going to be people on disabilities? Is it going to be people that get unemployment? Is it going to be people in public housing? I'm just really fed up. Paul Ryan... As far as Paul Ryan goes.
I don't want to kind of, yeah. This is too a war on the poor. Where is it going to stop, Kevin says. Kevin, in fact, I thought the initial proposal did include people on getting unemployment benefits. But he says, where does it stop?
Well, but it also was, I think it's pretty specific. It's talking about able-bodied people. It's not talking about the folks who are disabled, people unable to necessarily provide for themselves. It's the governor's proposals were pretty specific, I think. They weren't some broad-based attack on people who, through no fault of their own, find themselves disabled.
Yeah. And by the way, I just wanted to, our Abby, who wanted to know, would those who test positive get some sort of treatment? According to the Wisconsin State Journal, those who fail the test, I guess test positive for drugs, would be required to receive state-funded treatment in order to remain eligible for job training. So they would get state-funded treatment, and they'd need to do that if they wanted to stay in a job training program, which is what I believe they are on if they're getting these benefits.
When I was on the school board in Mosinee, we had a policy that allowed for athletes and other people involved in some of the curricular activities who had been drinking or they had drug issues to, rather than be caught by the coaches and or principals and kicked out of the athletic program, they really received a kind of an extra opportunity if they self-selected and turned themselves in and received treatment. So these are exactly the type of forward-looking policies that help people, not destroy their futures.
Dave in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Once again, the governor, what he's requested is puts nothing on, no food on my table, doesn't educate my kids, doesn't give me better health care, and the roads are still terrible. But what it does do is dog whistle his racist constituency that he will find someone they can feel superior to.
Well, I Kevin will need to respond to this as well, but it's Mike's turn. What do you say to that? Do you agree with that, Mike?
Well, I think there are a couple interesting points raised here. You know, I mean, certainly we've seen with the drug testing with unemployment benefits, you know, I mean, you've got consider the example of somebody who loses their job through no fault of their own, you know, and then you say you have to take a drug test in order to receive unemployment benefits when, you know, perhaps the person who made the decision to ship your job out of the state of Wisconsin and receive state grants at their business is not required to take a drug test. You know, I mean, there's a little bit of a disparity there, and certainly, you know, the points raised in this letter, and specifically this drug testing issue, I think do distract from other issues that are going on. You know, I mean, we're talking about drug testing. We aren't talking about the deficits that the state of Wisconsin under Governor Walker is facing. We're not talking about the crisis of transportation funding. We're not talking about how, you know, there are a million student loan borrowers with significant debt here in the state of Wisconsin, and the governor has failed to help them. You know, it is certainly a distraction from other issues, and I think as a policy, there are much better things that the state of Wisconsin could be doing to try and help people struggling with substance abuse issues.
Yeah, is this a distraction, Kevin?
No, I think it's part of the public policy position that Governor Walker and many people in the Republican legislature support. It is being fiscally responsible to the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin. It is designed to ensure that the handful or many, depending on the numbers that ultimately result. Listen, I hope that not a single person receiving food stamps is on drugs. gee, you know, what a great thing that would be. But we know that that isn't true because the law enforcement results, the law enforcement arrest records and other such things, and this is one of the things that our committee up here dealt with, prove that that's not true, where nobody receiving those benefits is on drugs. And so, whether it's drugs or alcohol or they have other addictions, you know, why should we limit it only to this addiction?
Dale in Wausau is with us now. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah,
I'd like to comment on the issue.
Yes, go ahead.
Most people that get a good-paying job have to take a drug test to get that good-paying job. So if people are getting free money from the state while not working, they should have to take a drug test as well. And to say that it's racist, is it racist to have an employer drug test you?
Yeah. Oh, what about that. We hear that argument, Mike Brown, that a lot of people with jobs have to take drug tests and pass them to even get the job. So why not in this area of their life?
You know, I think there are certainly it's a different issue with private employers and with the state of Wisconsin basically saying that the fact that you are receiving public assistance or seeking to receive public assistance gives them probable cause to drug test you. I mean, I think it's not an equivalency and it ought not be the policy of the state of Wisconsin. And I think from a point of fiscal responsibility, you know, other states run by Republican governors have found that this program simply does not work. It is not effective. It doesn't save money, and it doesn't help people in a meaningful way with substance abuse issues.
Kevin, want to talk about the drug testing by private employers?
Well, real briefly, I'm not positive about this. In fact, I'm not positive this is only a private employer thing. I'm frankly would be appalled if I learned that there are some jobs for the state of Wisconsin that do not require you to be drug tested. In fact, I'm pretty certain there are. If you want to work for a job where maybe you're on the public roads, I would think that you need to have already been drug tested. I know for a fact a lot of small business owners who are in the transportation area or even have people who have to go out on the job sites using employer vehicles, CDLs are pretty hard to retain for people who are facing drug or alcohol issues.
Yeah, since it's probable that there is drug testing for someone who has public safety in their job description in some way, but why is that comparable to someone who needs public assistance for, food stamps?
Well, I think, again, we're trying to ensure that the public is getting a good value for the dollars that they're paying in state funds or local funds. And why is it a bad thing? I mean, why is it a good thing? Why is it a bad thing is maybe the better question to ask.
Mike?
I would say the fact that, one, it doesn't work, and two, it's not constitutional would be a couple of pretty good reasons.
Kevin?
just briefly, there have been a number of appellate courts that have certainly backed up Mike's statement that it's been viewed as unconstitutional, but that doesn't, Governor Walker last in July of 2015 sued the federal government on the grounds that food stamps are welfare and that welfare recipients themselves can be tested. And so this just takes it one more step. And I'm not sure that this is a bad argument, that you maybe ought to come up with a better solution for solving people's drug problems than simply saying, oh, well, don't take away the things that they might otherwise have to spend their money on. So we're going to give them free food so that they can, and I know this isn't a food stamp conversation in regards to what can the food stamps actually pay for, because it goes far beyond just simple sustenance and assistance in getting people back on their feet.
Well, we need to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll talk about our third issue, the third issue that Governor Walker brought up in this letter to President-elect Trump. Governor Walker wants Wisconsin to have the ability to resume the hunting of gray wolves, and we'll talk about that, and we'll wonder what you think about that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org after the news. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. In a letter to President-elect Donald Trump yesterday, Governor Walker said he would like the state to have more say in determining how many refugees from countries with links to terrorism can come to Wisconsin. We talked about that issue in our first segment this hour. He also asked for the federal government's blessing to proceed with drug testing for some welfare recipients in Wisconsin, and we just concluded our discussion on that issue. Now, the third issue that Governor Walker wants President-elect Donald Trump to allow Wisconsin to do, wolf hunting. He wants Wisconsin to have the ability to resume the wolf hunt. The wolf was put back on the endangered species list by a judge, which stopped Wisconsin's wolf hunt. Should there be a wolf hunt in Wisconsin? Should the federal government allow Wisconsin to resume the hunting of gray wolves? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about these issues. Kevin Hermaning is with us. He is a financial planner from WASA, a political activist, a regular contributor to our Friday Week in Review programs, and he was also an elector who cast his vote on Monday for Donald Trump. And also joining us is the deputy director of One Wisconsin Now, Mike Brown. And let's, I guess, Kevin, let's start with you. You're kind of, sort of, in the Northwoods. Is this, what do you make of Governor Walker's request to allow the state to resume the wolf hunt?
Well, I think the governor's really just asking for the federal government to grant the state the authority to do what it had done so successfully to manage the process, to manage the species, which we had done pretty successfully, since 1974, I think. That's when the Endangered Species Act then began to cover the wolf. 1975 is when the Wisconsin DNR stepped in and took on that responsibility. And, you know, we began monitoring the gray wolf in the state of Wisconsin, and yes, particularly in the Northwoods, but it has by no means been limited to just the Northwoods. We're seeing wolves become a little bit less threatened by man and woman, by people. You know, we've had a plan in the state of Wisconsin for, what, almost 30 years to manage the wolf and get them recovered back into the state of Wisconsin, but now it's gone a little bit overboard. And you know, this is a little bit where a single judge decides to impose his will rather than look at the original crafting of the legislation that created this in the first place. And so, even though the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Administration thought that it was a good idea for the states to take on that responsibility, a judge decided that shouldn't happen. And this is overreach at the federal government, the federal court level, like in so many things in our lives.
So, Mike, what do you think? Should Wisconsin have the ability to manage its wolf population?
Well, I think, you know, what we've seen is that you know, certainly there has been some bipartisan support for delisting the wolf as an endangered species. You know, I mean, it was the Obama administration that had suggested it, and you know, the reintroduction of the wolves has had positive impacts on the environment in many respects. You know, I think you know, you've seen, like, in Yellowstone Park, for example, kind of the dramatic impact that the reintroduction of the wolf had in strengthening the ecosystem there. Obviously, we run into conflicts when you have, you know, in many cases where you have wild animals coming in contact with humans and livestock. But, you know, people still have the right to petition their government through the courts also. You know, I mean, there has been attempts to reach a legislative solution on this. you know, there has been support on among Democrats and Republicans for delisting the wolves. But you know, people also have a right to go to court and argue their case, and that's what's happening now. And it looks like we're just going to have to wait for the process to play out.
Yeah, Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin is among those. She is urging leaders in her party to support the delisting of the gray wolf. And you expect, Mike, that's going to happen legislatively?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point you raise. You know, the delisting of the wolves was apparently an issue that was included in the negotiations over an energy bill that had, I guess, just recently stalled in Congress. You know, just yesterday, Senator Lisa Murkowski from Republican senator from Alaska was raising concerns that, you know, the negotiations and the ability to get to a deal on the wolf issue and other energy issues fell apart because Paul Ryan adjourned the House and was on a train to a fundraiser in New York City. It appears that this is going to be a continuing issue, and there certainly is some interest in trying to resolve it legislatively, but there's also a court process that's going on also.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Yeah, you know, I think there is some bipartisan conversation to be had here. Agree or disagree, the federal judge who made this decision, I think 2011 or 2012, her name is Beryl Howell, and she's in Washington, D.C., the chief judge of the district, actually. And interestingly enough, she was appointed by George W. Bush to serve on the U.S. Sentencing Commission from 2004 to 2010, and then was elevated to this new position. But, you know, sometimes you have to look deeper than just who appointed them or what appears on the surface. More research would show that she's married to somebody who is an executive producer at National Geographic. And not that maybe she doesn't hold these personal views herself as well, that, you know, the positions of the Humane Society should override those of the safety and of the issues that were just raised by Michael. But is she actually looking at the legislation? Is she looking at the rulings of the or the positions of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Commission? Is she looking at the Constitution when she hands down her rulings? And I think in this case, the answer is no.
Yeah. We have a couple of callers who would like to get in on this in limited time. So let me go to David in Beaver Dam first. Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm not so much a sportsman as I do enjoy the outdoors. I think the wolves have grown, and I think they are vital to our ecosystem as far as managing deer and other, you know, a balance. But I do think they need a culling. I do think there needs to be a unlimited hunt to some degree for people to view a wolf and say, oh, majestic, furry, little lovable thing. They're a predator, and I do believe that they need to be culled. They need to be managed the same as deer.
Yeah, thank you very much, David. And I think there's plenty of people who support that position, Kevin, but there's also those who say that a limited hunt is a matter of definition, that maybe the hunt in Wisconsin was going too far, bringing them down to numbers that were even too low.
Well, I have a lot of confidence in Kathy Stepp and her team over at the state of Wisconsin's DNR to be able to do it right, to balance the desire to have a wolf population, the need to have a wolf population in the state, as well as to secure the safety and the overall environmental protections and economic protections that are also necessary in the state. So I have confidence that she and her team would get it right.
Mm-hmm. Mike, do you?
Well, I think certainly, you know, there is there has obviously been a good case to be made among professionals in the field that you know, there is a need to there's a need to manage the wolf population. You know, other folks disagree, and that's the process that we're going through right now.
Yeah, Norm in Oneida County. Hi, Norm.
Good morning.
Yeah, so you're in wolf country.
We should start listening to the biologists and stop listening to the politicians. The wolf has a very necessary and rightful place in our environment. We lose about 25% of the adult wolves every year. only about 30% of the wolf pups survived their first winter, and it's proven that somebody said earlier that they control the deer. But the point is, we should be doing this based on biology. I don't understand all this political rhetoric that goes in there. They don't seem to have their ducks in a row as far as what the wolf is all about. And what you don't hear about, there's another category for the wolves, and that's called the threatened species. If they're endangered, if they're on the threatened species list, we still can't hunt them and trap them, but Wildlife Services has the authority to take out problem wolves.
Would that be the answer in any way, Kevin?
Well, I think that was part of my point. The DNR and the U.S. Fish and Game or Fish and Wildlife Commissions, this is their responsibility. They know better. The scientists there and some of the people, yeah, they might be led by a political appointee, meaning the agency, but it doesn't mean that that Kathy Stepp is the one out there making the decision and doing the research herself. She has professionals who get this stuff right.
Yeah,
so why not put it back into her hands?
30 seconds for each of you, just briefly, what do you expect President-elect Trump to do with Governor Walker's requests? Mike?
I think what we've seen out of President-elect Trump is that he will probably do whatever he wants to do and has little regard for a letter released to the media by Governor Walker.
All right. Kevin?
I think that he is going to, with the assistance of people like Speaker Ryan, who, of course, is very close to Scott Walker, give serious consideration to the importance of returning rights back to the states. That was the original intent of the Constitution. We don't live in a democracy here in the United States. We live in a constitutional republic made up of 50 states, now 50 states, and give the states the rights to experiment and do a good job in the areas of great public policy.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Kevin Hermaning, financial planner from WASA, political activist, regular contributor to our Friday Week in Review programs, and Mike Brown, deputy director of One Wisconsin Now, responding to these three issues that Governor Walker wrote to President-elect Donald Trump about yesterday. Thank you to Chris Molina and to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. This is the Ideas Network.